This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us. Welcome to episode number 112 of TPF Live. I'm Rob Tiansen, joined alongside Brooklyn Jackson for another exciting edition of the Fastest Hour of Racing Talk. We hope you enjoy this one because it's the post-Martinsville pre-Texas Motor Speedway edition. Yes, again, I like to always delineate things because we just had a race at COTA not even 2 or 3 weeks ago, or basically when March Madness began. And March Madness has ended, of course. And we're going to the track in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, technically in Justin, Texas, at that 1.5-mile intermediate racetrack, just north of Dallas-Fort Worth. And it's certainly one of the more unique racetracks, to say the least. I was going to say beautiful, but I don't want to be on Danny Hamlin's bad side, because I'm sure he had a lot of opinions about Speedway Motorsports, Inc. and Marcus Smith, and I would rather just stay out of that fight if I can. And anyways, we have a lot to get to on this show. Lots to get to. Now, if you watched the race at Martinsville, well, you must have been multitasking because I'm sure you had your eyes on that certain game in Cleveland, Ohio, you know, the NCAA Women's Championship game. Excuse me, and probably 17 million people that watched it. Don't worry, NASCAR. I watched your race too on my new Hulu Live TV app. So, ha ha ha. I'm in two places at once, sort of, or three places if you count my house here in Austin, Texas. Iowa didn't win. I'm still grieving, but at least South Carolina is a worthy champion, so I can't say, oh, you know, I don't care for the new champion or I don't care for the refs. No, Iowa was just, it's an underdog situation. And, you know, it would have been cool, but I'll say what Caitlin Clark said during her press conference last Saturday, towards the end of the show, like when we get to the fun and sort of closing thoughts talk. But otherwise, I really loved what she had to say about her legacy, and I think it's worthy to share on the show. But in terms of interviews, well, the interview this week is going to be William Byron. Yes, at last. I know I teased you guys about this during episode 110, and I said, oh yeah, he's going to be here for 111. And then things kind of, you know, how NASCAR things can be a little bit fluid, a little crazy, but it's okay. We got you Alex Hillman last weekend, and now this weekend we've got the defending Texas Motor Speedway race winner, so it works out. And oh, by the way, he won on Sunday, so we know how to time things on TPF Live. I'm pretty excited to have William on the show, and he has a lot to get to on this edition of our show, which we recorded on Saturday, so literally before he buckled into his ruby red Exalted Chevrolet Camaro, which if I do release a video clip of our show, you'll see his car basically to my left shoulder or right, depending on what you're looking at. He's literally about to mow my head down. So, William, be a little bit careful. Just leave your car right there. Don't hit me. Anyways, let's go bring in Brooklyn. And by the way, Nathan is off again this week. He is a busy, busy senior student, but that's okay. We get it. And you know that he did cover the action at Martinsville Speedway with Wayne Riegel. Well done, gentlemen. Awesome, awesome job. And I'm very pleased with all the coverage we provided at Martinsville and off-site. And now, of course, it's TMS with Sean Folsom and Dylan Adwani. Yeah, I wish I could be there next year. But anyways, Brooklyn, glad to have you on. It's midweek. We can't complain. It's Texas Motor Speedway Race Weekend. I know people have their thoughts about Texas, but what about yours?
Texas is kind of one. I kind of have a love with it. But I'm excited to see what this week brings.
Well, I hope people have a Ryan Blaney attitude about Texas Motor Speedway, because I wouldn't say he loves the racetrack, but he seemed to be like kind of in a good mood about the racetrack when he was talking about it, whether it was in the booth on Saturday night for the Xfinity race coverage that he was working on with Austin Cindric and Adam Alexander, or after the race on Sunday when Nathan interviewed him in the huddle or bullpen on pit road. He was just like, I'm looking forward to Texas. Texas is going to be great. And again, not a lot of people say good things about Texas, which I'm like, come on, people. I love that track. But of course, I'm a shill. I live here, so I'm supposed to love it. I do recognize its flaws, but I like the people and I like the competition, and it's unique. Okay. It's not your typical cookie cutter intermediate racetrack, but We'll get into all the nitty-gritty on that a little bit later, and I hope you race fans at us, because I want to have some opinions to read on the show from you folks. But anyways, before we get to opinions and all the fun on putting perspectives, let's go hear from our presenting sponsors, WeatherDiecast.com. Hey there, racing fans. Are you on the lookout for the latest NASCAR, IndyCar, or F1 diecasts in the market? Well, look no further than SpoilerDiecast.com for the latest and greatest and fastest shipping in the industry. And did you know, if you use code TPF on orders of $20 or more, you'll get free shipping and 5% off of your orders. And that's really easy money to save. So head on over to SpoilerDiecast.com and use code TPF to get 5% off of your orders of $20 or more. And if you happen to be in the area in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Spoiler Diecast is now open for business at their storefront location at 6004 Highview Drive, Suite E in Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's 6004 Highview Drive, Suite E, Fort Wayne, Indiana. SpoilerDiecast.com for the latest and greatest in diecast collectibles. We'll see you in the fast lane. We'll catch you on the flip side on Pony Perspectives, powered by SpoilerDiecast.com. Well, for this week, we'll kick things off, as always, on Pony Perspectives with William Byron's victory at Martinsville Speedway. But it was not just some ordinary victory or his third win of the year. Oh, by the way, I believe he passed Terry Labonte on the all-time wins list, which that's an interesting factoid right there in terms of, you know, the Hendrick family, because Terry drove for them for 13 seasons, 12 years. And William Byron has started to come on fire with how he's doing things. I believe it's the win totals that he passed as a driver with Hendrick Motorsports, because William only has 13 wins to Terry Labonte's 22 victories. But anyways, the cool thing about Sunday's race was that we had a Hendrick Motorsports 1-2-3. I guess you could say they got the memo about, you know, getting a podium finish. Because Kyle Larson, the pole sitter, won stage one, and for a while, like, he was going to win the race. Then Joey Logano discovered that you don't need to change tires, really, at Martinsville Speedway. He took two, and he had incredible track position, was able to hold off those drivers like Larson, Denny Hamlin, for many laps with old tires, which was amazing to see. Denny Hamlin won stage two. Larson fell back to third. But William Byron, who started 18th, he didn't care about his track position where he started the race. He was like, let's just get through the field. Let's get up from 18th to 8th. Let's get 3 stage points. Yep, that sounds good. Stage two. Oh, yeah, another 8th place finish. Let's get another 3 points. I like that. It's an even number, right? So we get to stage 3, the longest stage of the race, of course, as natural, within a NASCAR race. What does William Byron do? What he's been doing all season long. He comes through in the clutch. And he broke the hearts of many drivers and fans who were probably starting to feel the same way as fans when they saw Jeff Gordon in that 24 car win. Well, you could say a little too much, but the season's young. But it seems like William Byron is picking up where he last left off in 2023. He was the leading driver in wins last year, and he looks like he's well on his way to getting 6 wins again. So, Brooklyn, I wanted to get your thoughts on the fact that William Byron led the Hendrick Motorsports podium sweep, which I know Chase Elliott came close again, got a 3rd place finish, and also the significance of Hendrick getting their 29th victory at the paperclip, and just how special it was for this storied organization in its 40th anniversary season to get the win at Martinsville.
I thought that I wasn't surprised they ran well. I mean, that's a track I expect Hendrick to run well at. I mean, and especially with their qualifying positions. I definitely get what you were saying about, like, the fans starting to feel like they did with Jeff Gordon. I was like, oh my goodness, he's just dominating straight. I mean, he did last season also, but he's just dominating straight out of the gate. Oh my goodness. There was a period of time, however small, that I really thought, again, my pick was going to be right, and that Chase would be able to get it, or that Kyle would be able to get it, even if Chase didn't, but it turned out to be William.
And William is just having a heck of a year. It's interesting that he's not doing this. He's doing this winning races, but not being dominant. He's just been sneaky. He's doing enough. And if this was a NASCAR Cup Series without stage racing, we wouldn't even make a big stink about, oh, he snuck in and won the race. We just say, man, he's kind of being a hog about victory lane. But when we have races broken down into stages, it makes you appreciate what he and Rudy Fugel are doing right now. They're in the middle of a significant start and stride to the year that, you know, it doesn't matter where we're going. They're just so good anywhere. And I find it interesting. They can win at Daytona, a super speedway. They can win at Circuit of the Americas in Del Valle, Texas, a road course. And now they've won in the shortest racetrack, well, aside from the Coliseum, in Martinsville Speedway. This team has virtually no weakness right now. So even when we get to Texas Motor Speedway and you're like, I don't think William's going to win there. Nope. He won last September in that disgustingly hot and humid race. It won't be hot and humid, but it's going to be warm and very windy. But I still think the number 24 team is probably going to be everyone's favorite. And I have a sneaky suspicion that Brooklyn's going to pick him for the winning time picks. But they're just so good. They're just amazing. And they have basically the same cadence and communication that I recognized with Jeff Gordon and Ray Evernham. And I think William and Rudy just have this unspoken rapport with each other where they know what they need to do. And now, of course, you have to communicate. He's not like a mind reader and goes, I think he's struggling in there. He needs me to loosen up the car. But I think just they already know how to complete each other's sentences, if you know what I'm saying. Like, it's just very harmonious. It's that good. So I can't hate on it. I think it's great to see that William Byron is starting to realize his potential as a superstar driver. Because let's not forget, he kind of had a meteoric rise as a driver, as a teenager in ARCA, in trucks, Xfinity. I mean, we would be talking about him possibly being one of those latest drivers to win all three championships, because he should have won in 2016 in trucks if it wasn't for that engine that blew up at Phoenix. But it worked out because he got the Xfinity Championship with Gian Junior Motorsports in 2017. And it wouldn't surprise me if he gets it done this year. So, and the fact that he got a podium at Martinsville, I found it very interesting, Brooklyn, that no other team has ever accomplished that. Because I'm thinking back that this track has been around since basically before NASCAR was even around. They were having races at this track when it was a dirt oval. And you would have thought those teams back in the late 40s, early 50s would have accomplished this, but I guess not. So I know it's a big deal. Kind of to quote what Drew Blickensterfer and Jamie McMurray said on Tuesday's airing at Race Hub, it's going to be something they'll talk about during a holiday party. And you want to be the driver that won that race that's mentioned at the holiday party. Knowing what we saw in the NASCAR Netflix documentary, I bet you we're going to see season two where Jeff and the crew are having a holiday party and they're going to bring up William's victory at Martinsville. So congrats to William and Rudy on their second Martinsville victory. You people at home better not be hating on this. It's, you know, I know it seems like William's this really polite. He's, I don't want to say the word vanilla because I like vanilla ice cream, but William does have a personality. And I think you'll start to hear that and see that in the interview later on in the show. Now, I got to say, too, during Sunday's race that I noticed some steady improvements by the Ford Performance Camp, because Joey Logano, Chase Briscoe, and Ryan Preece, they actually had pace on Sunday. Now, I know we only have so few short tracks on the NASCAR Cup Series schedule, but we've been talking a lot about Ford Performance on the show this year, but how they haven't really had good finishes, struggles, if you will, with the new Ford Mustang Dark Horse body. And of course, the infamously bad start for Joey Logano for this year. But, you know, since we've been addressing that and he was like in the 30s in points, you know, Joey Logano had a great top 10 finish. And guess what? He's climbed up to 14th in points. So anyone who put him 6 feet under, you may want to, like, I don't know, make sure you get him out of the hole and then start to, you know, fill that hole that you were digging for him, because he's making his way back up the serial order. And Chase Briscoe looks really good too in 16th place. And Ryan Preece, I know he's 26 in points, but don't count him out. He's a really talented driver, hardworking, hard-nosed driver. And I think he's starting to rein a little bit on his aggression that I know that can be his undoing at times as a driver. But, you know, I know we've been paying attention to all the OEMs and how Ford's been doing Brooklyn. Do you think that these recent gains that Ford has made during the stretch of short track races and even counting COTA, do you think it's going to carry over going into Texas?
I think there's a very good possibility it could. That's going to be an interesting storyline to watch in Texas. I definitely feel like Ford is beginning to figure things out a little bit, and kind of get their footing and just get some momentum that they all need. I mean, we all know that Blaney's kind of been carrying the Ford logo this earliest part of the season, I would say. But I feel like several others, like you said, the Joey Logano, kind of maybe he's digging himself out of the hole. They worked themselves into, I mean, same with like the Chase Briscoe. They're kind of, I feel like some big Ford names are kind of starting to find some footing, which is really valuable. And it'll be interesting to see what they can do in Texas to keep that momentum up. And with those names, like you said, those are some really great, respectable drivers. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were, and I look for them to have good runs.
I mean, it's good to have some parity in the front of the field, given that we've seen stretches where Chevrolet has been dominating, then Toyota kind of dominated, and now Chevrolet's kind of asserting their presence again. And Ford's like, don't forget about us. We may not win a lot of races, but we do win what matters, which is the championship. And Joey Logano, the struggles his number 22 team has had, I would say admittedly has been happening since the middle of last year. And absolutely. When he got to the point when he said, I was not having any fun. I mean, when you're having that mindset, I'm not like assuming, I'm not trying to like put words in his mouth. But I know for myself, when I start to say things like that, I'm basically setting myself up to fail. And it's no surprise that, you know, that kind of mentality may have dug him a really bad hole for the beginning of the year. But, you know, ever since the struggles he had since Phoenix, I think really since Bristol, things have gotten better. I mean, he's finished 11th at COTA, got second at Richmond, sixth at Martinsville. To go from 31st to 14th in points is no easy feat. And I know it doesn't really matter where you stack up in points as long as you know, obviously get into the top 16 in the playoff standings. He could be like 29th place in points. And if he has the wins to back him up into the playoffs, then he's fine. But it certainly gives him some ease if, say, for instance, we have three or four availabilities for a driver without any wins to get their way into the playoffs, to point their way into the playoffs. And right now, I think they're having to realize maybe they have to enjoy that bowl of soup a little bit better, rather than saying, oh man, we'll all be cut with sproth and bones and a little bit of veggies. Maybe you're starting to say the veggies are not so bad after all. So that's the way I'm seeing it. I'm sorry, it's not dinner time. I'm just thinking that's what they're thinking. But the Ford Mustang Dark Horse. Sorry, folks. It's still springtime. We're thinking about cold season food still on the show. But I really think it's great to see, you know, the Fords doing a little bit better than they were at the beginning of the season. And certainly for someone like Chase Briscoe. Oh, by the way, congrats to him and his wife, Marissa. They're expecting twins later this year. My goodness. I'm laughing because having one kid is tough. To have two new ones on the way, bless their souls in a good way. And I wish them nothing but the best and happiness and good health for both their babies to be here safe and sound later this year. And I know it's no coincidence ever since they made that announcement that Chase has kind of, you know, had a little pep in his step. He's feeling pretty motivated to do well. I know the joke would be, well, because he's now going to have two more mouths to feed in the house, he better be doing better. But It's good to see because Chase is one of the nicer guys in the garage area. He'll give you the time of day, even if he's had a bad race or things may have not worked out for him. He's got a good attitude about him, so it's so good to see him having success and getting three top tens already this year. Given that it's third Haas racing, that's a big deal. That's a really big deal. Good to see for them on that campus with all that we talked about last week about them perhaps contracting down to three cars for next season. Now, I know this is going to be a really spicy topic for us to talk about Brooklyn, and I know a lot of fans who may be listening to us are probably going to feel the same way too. The short track package. And this is where I wish we had Nathan on the show. So, Nathan, come back soon because I know you have very big opinions on this topic. The short track package. Okay, let me set it up for y'all. Not the whole story. We've already done the TLDR twice on the show the past few weeks. I will say this. The consensus last weekend for Richmond, we all liked it. We pretty much liked it, okay? We thought it was a pretty decent Richmond race. Short track package, not bad, right? Martinsville. Little bit of a different story. I mean, if you're a Hendrick Motorsports fan, you're not complaining. You're like the kid who studied for the test while everyone's like, the test was unfair. I didn't like it. It was nothing like what we had practiced for or studied for. And the consensus I'm getting is that fans don't really care for the short track package. But before I give my opinions on it, I wanted to get yours, Brooklyn, because oh boy, this is a spicy one. This is the kind of a sensitive topic, I would say.
It is. So I went into Bristol trying to just like be indifferent. Like most people, I thought Richmond was a good race. I thought by Richmond standards, it was a very it was a good racing race as but Martinsville truck for trucks in Xfinity. I thought it was good, solid, just typical Martinsville. But for Cup, I was not in the new package. I was not, I was underwhelmed, to say the least. I just feel like there wasn't as much passing as there could have, should have been. I mean, I just feel like it wasn't a typical Martinsville race like the trucks and Xfinity races were. I just feel like some of the Martinsville spunk was taken out of it a little bit.
It's a situation where I hope fans at home understand it's not the track that's the problem because Martinsville's a really good track. It's been around since 1948 and it's not going to go anywhere, I hope. But yeah, I would agree. The truck race was really good. Honestly, was really good. The Xfinity race I thought was a pretty fascinating one. Chandler Smith working his way from 37th to finish third. And then I know it's the Toyotas, Joe Gibbs Racing, but that was a pretty good thing with Sam Mayer getting involved late in the race on Saturday night. And then the Cup race, go ahead.
Oh, it was there was movement. It was just kind of what you expect to see from Martinsville.
Exactly. And that was what I was like, oh man, I'm kind of hoping Sunday's race would feature a little bit of that. But it seemed like as soon as you had the clean air, you pretty much were going to be staying in the front. So I was saying to our team, and I know Nathan was expressing as much too, we were like, you don't even need to change tires at this point. You could have just done two or gas and go, and you probably would have been fine. I think the only spicy part of the race is when John Hunter Nemechek hit the wall on lap 398 to bring out the overtime session, the second in a row after we went all season long without one. Now it's been two in a row. And I know Jeff Gordon on the pit box for Kyle Larson was just like, but I was like, Jeff, you're fine. Don't worry. Because sure enough, Denny Hamlin goes to pit road thinking, I'm going to charge through the field with four tires on this overtime. No, he didn't. He finished 11th. So track position was king. Clean air was everything. Dirty air is an issue. And it seems like we. It's a scary situation, Brooklyn, where 10 years ago we would say, please, more short tracks, no intermediate tracks, Kentucky, Charlotte, Atlanta, Texas, all of y'all go away. You know, it's kind of like this saying that we have, like youngsters would say, and I know what it means, but I am certainly not going to translate what it means. But I would say for folks, the same feeling they have about Mother Nature when it comes to her or intermediate racetracks back in the 2010s, all I would say is be gone, thought. But no, it was not a case that you'd want to say these years. We're all like, oh, intermediate tracks, please come here. We want you. And short tracks, be gone, thought. Be gone, thought. So it's not the short tracks, people. Just take it easy. These babies are great to have on the track. It's just more, maybe NASCAR needs to do a little bit more homework, more horsepower. I'm not criticizing you, NASCAR. So don't hate me. This is just an opinion.
The bright side I'm trying to look at it for me personally, because of the tracks I'm partial to, is, you know, maybe this is a case to get Kentucky back. Because I know a lot of people have different feelings about Kentucky and whatever. And those are all completely valid. I'm not here saying like you have to love Kentucky. I'm partial to Kentucky because that's where I went to my first race. And I would personally just like to see it back in the rotation. And so maybe this is a case to, hey, get it back. I know they just built an airport like across the street, basically. I mean, super close to the track. So, I mean, they've kept it up.
Just let's go back to Kentucky. There's just so much opportunity. And, you know, it's in a perfect market because Cincinnati's not that far. All right. Indianapolis, it's another race to go to when IMS is not hosting a cup race after July, like when you're waiting between that. It's just in a good market area. And I often think that the Kentucky area is often like, yeah, we love NASCAR. Let's watch it. And the fact that we haven't gone back since 2020 is so mind-boggling because these cars would really, I'm gonna sound like a Gen Xer or Gen Zer. Those cars would be so sick at Kentucky. Oh my God, I feel gross saying that. Oh man, no, but I don't feel gross about supporting Kentucky Speedway. I think it ought to be back on the schedule. Yeah, you know, the more the merrier with diversity in terms of the tracks that we have on the Cup Circuit. And even Xfinity. Xfinity, had, Nathan would say this, and I'm not impersonating him, but he often will say, Xfinity has the best track package ever. And I agree. They would absolutely kill it at Nashville. So, Nashville. They would absolutely kill it at Kentucky, so we've got to go back to Kentucky at some point. So, yeah. These are thoughts you would never imagine us saying 10 years ago. This is like if we could put a time capsule and we were telling our future selves back in 2014 to 2024, oh, by the way, you're going to be clamoring for the intermediates. We'd be like, yeah, right. But no.
And here I am in 2024 starting a free Kentucky movement.
Yep. I'm with you, and I'm defending Texas Motor Speedway when 10 years ago I'd be like, you only needed one race there, Marcus. You didn't need two, and now I'm like, we need a second one. Come back during the playoffs. No, I'm just kidding, sort of. But, yeah, short track package. See, it's what I'm saying. It gets really spicy when we talk about it. So I know on Jeff Gluck's poll, which I have opinions on that, which I may share a little bit later for my closing thoughts as well, in addition to this particular player whose card I'm holding. Well, you can't really see something on a podcast, but on a video you may see it. Ha ha ha. Anyways, I feel like a lot of folks have opinions about the, you know, when Jeff Gluck puts a poll, and yeah, it's unanimously no for this race being a good one. Are we getting to the point where we're starting to dictate how a race is, like, to, how am I trying to say this? Are we basically trying to quantify a race based on a poll rather than having our own free opinions? Like, I know Brooklyn and I just discussed ours, but it's kind of getting to the point where I'm like, man, we're group thinking it because of a poll on Twitter. And I'm not blaming Jeff. He's a good, He's a great journalist. It's just more, I feel like fans at home just sometimes. Yeah. Anywho, that's a really fun topic to talk about. So in any event, let's move on to the Xfinity race. That was fun, by the way. Now for our fourth topic, we have to talk about Joe Gibbs Racing's domination during Saturday night's Dude Wipes 250. And by the way, I know I talked about, we're going to go to Long John Silver and get our fish and chicken tenders. Then probably use some Dude Wipes to kind of clean up the business and then go to Cookout and really feel sick to our stomachs after eating the Martinsville hot dogs. Okay, enough of that joke. Now for the Xfinity race, I'm coughing because I'm having a good time talking about my stupid joke. Joe Gibbs Racing really turned up the wick, of course, in recent weeks. We know that Chandler Smith has won at Phoenix. He won at Richmond. And oh, by the way, Eric Almirola, who said, "I'm not retired. I'm just having a lot more fun doing part-time racing." Not his exact words. I'm just kind of TLDRing. Well, he finally got the victory he needed at Joe Gibbs Racing without Denny Hamlin getting in that car. So that was a nice moment to see. And his victory lane speech was really funny. I didn't catch the whole thing about him and Ryan Blaney and why Eric Almirola would be crying. I was like, inside joke, maybe. But in any event, it was good to see Eric win, and he didn't win the Dash for Cash, so he is $100,000 richer. Well, I hope he spread the wealth with his team, because they certainly did their part. And Chandler Smith, 37th to 3rd. That is insane. That kid had a great race after screwing it up, really, on Friday, hitting the wall in an opening practice, and then making his team work until about, I want to say, 3 a.m. in the morning in Huntersville. Like, that is just crazy dedication to go fix that car. But they really had a lot of confidence, not only in their driver, but to fix their car for Chandler. And he rewarded them. He almost got the victory, but he got a good third place finish. And I believe he gets to go for another Dash for Cash this coming weekend at Texas. So, Brooklyn, when we think about Smith in particular, with what he's accomplished this year, is he someone to consider for the championship going into the season? And knowing how much homework he has seemed to put forth since he's joined the team in late 2023.
He is absolutely someone I think we can't count out for, I would say, at minimum, the championship for at this point. I don't know that. Honestly, at this point, I may even be more comfortable putting him in the championship position more than some people who I would have at the very beginning of the race. Yeah. So I think he's in my Xfinity championship four, my updated championship four for Xfinity. He's just been, like you said, he's done, you can tell he's done his homework. I mean, he's just showing up this season when it counts. He's fast. He has good pace. He and his team are just working well together.
They're just, he and Jeff Meandering, excuse me, he and crew chief Jeff Meandering are just so good right now. They, like I said earlier about Rudy and William in the Cup side, these two just have a great chemistry. They're communicating. And even when Chandler screwed the pooch on Friday, I'm sure they had some words, in the holler afterwards, and, saying, "Hey, look, you're going to make the crew work a little harder than they needed to on Friday night in their Saturday morning. You owe it to us, buddy." And he rewarded them. I thought that was, he could have done it two ways. He could have been down on himself and feeling like poop. That's necessitating needing the Dude Wipes. But he didn't go that way. He was mature, or mature, however you say it, in the South. And he did a good job just getting the job done. And honestly, he's probably the scariest driver. I don't mean like personality-wise. I just mean potential-wise. He's just super scary good right now. I know I said earlier in the season that I was going to go, oh, goodness. Well, Caitlin Vincey said Sheldon Creed to win the championship. I know I said some, you guys got to remind me who I picked for the championship. So hit us up in the comments. But I would say, honestly, right now, Chandler Smith is probably going to be my pick. I'm going to switch it around and say, yeah, this guy's got everything going in his corner. And I'm not just saying that because I know everybody in the media tends to go after the person who's won most recently. And we make big arguments like, oh, yeah, William Byron's won 3 races. He's going to win the championship, blah, 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 blah. But Chandler Smith, honestly, is consistent. He, again, doesn't really have much weak points. And even when he gets frazzled, it's very temporary. And he gets right back to work and he doesn't, you know, whine or complain. He just does his job and he gets the best finish he can out of that car. And he did exactly that on Saturday night. And he's heading to Texas Motor Speedway, which is a pretty decent racetrack for him. So I expect to see him toward the front of the field on Saturday afternoon, almost at nighttime. But it's one of those weird schedules, which we'll talk about towards the end of Podium Perspectives. Now, before we get into the superlative categories that we do now every week, we do have to talk about Kyle Larson, because on Wednesday, he got to be behind the wheel of his number 17, HendrickCars.com, Arrow McLaren, the Lara Chevrolet, on Wednesday afternoon at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Now, of course, unfortunately, due to rain, he didn't really get to be out there too long, but based on the open test session for the 108th running of the Indianapolis 500, you may want to actually think about having Kyle Larson as a pick at Indianapolis, because he was the second quickest overall, which is impressive, out of 34 cars. Now, of course, when we look at the speeds, it does consider who was getting a tow or who was drafting. And then, of course, those single car efforts, which are the more indicative tale of the tale of things that goes on with speeds. But this is really, if people think, like, when people say Kyle Larson's this amazing super special driver and people go, no, he's not. Denny Hamlin's a better driver, or Denny Hamlin's what we need in NASCAR. Why are people like me so high on Kyle Larson? This is why. The guy can drive sports cars. He's got a Rolex 24 victory with a, you know, obviously with the team, but he was a contributing member of that team with Ganassi back in the mid 2010s. He's obviously Mr. Sprint Cars, which we'll get to see on Saturday night, hopefully, weather permitting, with the wind at Texas Motor Speedway, because High Limit Racing is coming to DFW, which should be a lot of fun to see Kyle in that number 57 car. But on Wednesday, how impressive was this? He's not even an IndyCar regular. He really doesn't have a lot of laps in these cars. And the guy looks like he's already done this so many times. I know he's a professional, but we should be oohing and aahing about this, because to go have a lap time of 226.384 miles an hour, or 39.7554 seconds around Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which, let me tell you, that track will make your hair stand, because it's the track. It's like the same feeling people have going underneath the turn 4 tunnel at Daytona for stock car or sports car action. I think the same feeling is evoked at Indianapolis when you cross the yard of bricks or just get to be in Speedway Indiana for this, for anything. But the fact that he's second quickest ahead of some very big names, Brooklyn. I mean, Scott Dixon's in third. Alex Palou, he's a perennial IndyCar champion. He's up there too. The only person who was faster than him was Joseph Newgarden. Oh boy. We still have the test to go on Thursday, which we'll update you on, folks, on the website. So if you want to see what goes on, check that out. But what do you think right here about Kyle Larson? What does it say about his chances next month for the month of May?
I didn't know what to really think about his chances. I knew he had decent chances, but I won't say every day, but at least monthly, my mind is blown by the talent of this man. I mean, is there anything he can't drive? He's, like you said, you listed his, just not even a fraction of his resume, and it's insane. I mean, it's mind-blowing, the level of talent, and I mean, I feel like he is getting, I mean, he's getting hype enough, but also at the same time, I feel like he's really not in some ways, because to go into a series, like you said, that he's never driven, and to pass some of their biggest names just with your first try, that is incomprehensibly difficult.
It's staggering to see someone of his talent in our generation doing what he's doing, because I wasn't old enough to really remember AJ Foyt, obviously, when he raced in the late 80s and early 90s. But a lot of folks who've been around longer than me would often say, well, AJ Foyt could race anything. And then Mario Andretti, you could argue the same thing for him. Tony Stewart, we often hear the comparison between Smoke and Young Money. But Kyle Larson, I think he's on a league of his own to do what he does, to race what he does. And he doesn't just race what he does, he's competitive in what he does. I mean, even last year, I believe he did a Cars Tour late model race midweek in June. And even if he didn't really drive late models as much as he used to, he got a top 10 finish at Caraway Speedway, which was impressive to me, considering it's a way different beast. So I feel like the stranger the car is, the more he succeeds in it, which I think that kind of says the same thing about him with short tracks. I know he often downplays his chances at a place like Martinsville, where he's like, I'm not comfortable there. I'm not good at Martinsville. And I'm thinking, no, you're really good. That's why I made a point about his track record recently since he joined Hendrick and how great he is at Martinsville. I think it's more of a case where Kyle's pretty humble about himself, has a lot of humility, and rather he would rather have his on-track action speak for what he does as a driver and what he's going to accomplish with this first ever Hendrick 1100 double of racing at Indy in Charlotte. I can't wait. I'm already counting down to Memorial Day Sunday just to see this happen. I hope Mother Nature takes a break, because again, I'm going to say a young person thought. And Brooklyn's probably going to be like, man, I want to know who taught Rob all these sayings. But Mother Nature, when it comes to her and racetracks, all I can say is, be gone, thought. I wasn't paid to say that, I promise. But it's going to be fun to see him do it. Well, Kyle said during his first day at Indianapolis, he said, getting in some traffic and feeling the turbulent air. The first time I got in traffic, I think my tires still had good grip. So I was surprised. It didn't feel that different in traffic. Then the last time I was building understeer, using the terminology, and Newgarden got by me and I was super tight behind him. I'm just trying to learn all that and process all that and knowing what I can do in the car to cope with that. I'm just trying to figure out any bit of racecraft, which I know is tough, just get my notes in my head and all that. He is like an Ivy Leaguer in terms of motorsports, because just reading all that makes my head blow up. Because to adapt to the cup car with the different shifting gears and stuff, to do shifting at ovals now, that's talent. To drive a sprint car, which we know is a different beast altogether, amazing. And now IndyCar, like, oh my God, incredible. I can't wait to see
his racing IQ is insane. I mean, a lot of people talk about like Kobe Bryant's or Michael Jordan's or like Alex Morgan's IQ for basketball and soccer, but he is that for racing. I mean, his racing IQ is just extremely awe-inspiring.
It really is. Like, women or basketball fans, women sports fans and basketball fans who are all about Caitlin Clark and Caitlin Clark mania, we have something like that with now Kyle Larson, and it's a treat. I don't think we're going to fully appreciate it until he retires, but it's fun to cover what he does, because he doesn't really have a air of cockiness. He's more got an air of humility and just genuineness to just get the job done, which I admire. So It'll be cool to see what he can do, hopefully on Thursday if the weather permits. And then next month, he's going to have a lot of air. I hope he has, and he's not going to fly commercial, but if he did, I hope he gets some bonus points or mileage bonus points on his award card or something. Because going into Speedway to Concord and back and forth and all of that, no thank you. No thanks. That's a lot. But I know he said, folks, that he will not miss the All-Star race, but I'm just saying, let's just say he has a really fast car and he gets to the final qualifying round. What then? Does he decide to stick around in Speedway and miss the All-Star race and a shot at $1 million? Or does he say, good staying in the top 12? Forget it. I'll just head down to North Wilkesboro. We should respect the decision either way, and we'll find out what happens. We'll report it to y'all on the ponyfinish.net. Now, ladies and gents, it's time for us to get to the superlatives as to who impresses the most and who needs a goodies headache powder from Martinsville. So, Brooklyn, you go ahead and take the lead on this. I know you're getting your notes on about it. I'm just curious who caught your eyes good and who needs a headache powder.
I was impressed by, I'll just say Blaney, because he had to come down pit road. He had the tire incident, and he was able to recover from that. And Jonathan had John, his crew chief, Jonathan Hassler, had some really good calls. And so I was just impressed by not only Blaney as a driver, but just he and Jonathan's teamwork, and that's who impressed me the most this weekend.
Yeah, those two figured it out. And I think Jonathan Hassler is a really brilliant crew chief. He got his thinking cap on to make his driver get back in position. Yeah, because during that pit stop after stage one, when they were trying to do the adjustment, they didn't do that. I was like, oh man, it's going to be a long day for Ryan Blaney, but it was not. So I would say that's a pretty solid choice for sure. And who impressed you the most? And I'm sure, Brooklyn, you have your opinions on who needs a goodies headache powder.
Like we said, the cup race was, I'll go ahead and just call it mild. So I didn't really feel like any of them needed a headache powder. So I'm going to go ahead and give my headache powder to Brandon Jones for missing the gear shift during the Xfinity race. I mean, I think he'll be okay, but I guess he still deserves a headache powder for that.
I mean, it's too bad because he keeps having bad luck everywhere he goes. It's like he's probably waiting for something to hit him in the head. Like he may have crossed a black cat or went underneath a ladder or something. Because I thought for sure when he got the pole for the race, I was like, hey, he's gonna get himself a top 10 finish. Nah. 27th place finish and he got involved in a crash.
He's just another one who's kind of run into bad luck, like at the early part of this season. I think he'll recover. I mean, I'm not worried about him, but
The man certainly needs a little bit of a break, or as I would say, he needs a little bit of grace for things to finally go his way. I am going to go a little bit of a different direction than you in terms of who caught my eye and who needs a goodies headache powder. So I'll start with the good news, of course. For me, the driver that really impressed me the most in terms of stand-up performances, I can't really say anything on Cup because Cup is Cup. The same people, well, obviously SHR was good to see them do something really positive on that side of things. But I am going to give my attaboy, if you will, to Carson Quapple because it was his debut in the Xfinity series. We obviously know how talented he is in the Cars Tour, and it's quite clear that Dale and Kelly have their next Josh Berry. And Carson Quapple. He was really calm. He didn't really mix it up in a bad way. And he got the finish that the car could get him, which was a solid top five finish. Finished fourth, didn't really piss off anybody, which is good to do at a short track. So I think he certainly impressed me. I think the driver who really needs a goodies headache powder. I really can't see anybody in the truck series. So I'm going to give this to our friend AJ Allmendinger because he's probably glad the short track season's kind of done with right now because it's been rough. Richmond did not go his way at all. And then at Martinsville, I know he started off with a great fifth place finish in stage one, but then immediately in stage two gets swept up in that big mess that brought out I believe it brought out a red flag very early in the race, which was a shocking moment with what happened. And it's kind of frustrating because I know for AJ and his psyche, sometimes it can really get hit, and he can get down on himself. And who wouldn't in that position? But we all know that the 16 team is capable of winning races. I know if you ask AJ, he would probably tell you they're probably lacking a little bit of speed right now, compared to what he would normally expect out of that car. And he's eighth place in points, which is not bad, but he's got quite a chunk of points to catch up to Chandler Smith and Cole Custer, along with Austin Hill. And Jesse Love, the rookie, by the way. We probably don't give him enough credit for being good, but AJ right now, I'm sure he had some goodies headache powders and he's ready to get to Texas. And I know he's not sponsored by Andy's Frozen Custard, but I hope he has some Allmendingers to enjoy. I'm not going to share the joke he said to me 2 years ago because we're primarily a family show. I'll let you kind of figure out what he said to me based on the flavor's name, Allmendinger. All right. Anyways, I'm not Conan O'Brien or Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel. I'm not going to go down that road on jokes. Let's get down to winning time now on our show where Brooklyn and I are going to give our picks for Friday night's NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series SpeedyCash.com 250. The defending race winner is Carson Hocevar, but he's not entered in the race. Then on Saturday afternoon, it's the NASCAR Xfinity Series Andy's Frozen Custard 300, again at Texas Motor Speedway. Jon Hunter Nemechek is the defending race winner. Oh, but by the way, he's not entered in the race this time. But on Sunday, we have the NASCAR Cup Series Auto Trader EchoPark Automotive 400 at Texas as well, in which, yes, William Byron is the defending race winner. And I hear a lot of groans right now because I know Williams won a lot of races. Oh, man, stop winning. But he's done his homework, so you can't hate somebody who's actually doing their job. Anyways, Brooklyn, go ahead and give your picks, and then I'll give mine after you. We're good on that, by the way. I just had to kind of record that part, which I'll edit after the show. Anyways, pretend I said all the stuff about the winning time picks. All right, Brooklyn, go ahead and give us your picks, and I'll give you ours. Go ahead, Brooklyn, make your picks now, and I'll give mine after you.
Alrighty, for trucks, I have Mr. Ty Majeski. And then for Xfinity, I have Sammy Smith. And then for Cup, I know you've mentioned that you thought I would go in the direction of William Byron. You almost have me figured out. You're so close to having me figured out because I'm going Kyle Larson.
Man, that's a great pick for Sunday's race. I was going to go in that direction, so I'm going to have to go with my backup plan on that. Now, for Friday night's race for the Truck Series, I'm going to say Tricon Garage is going to get the victory, but not with Corey Heim. I'm going to go with Taylor Gray because Taylor has been off to a really good start to the year. When you think about his maturity in the last 3 years, it went from a driver who was foolishly recording his test session on his cell phone while driving his ARCA car to now all of a sudden, I can see Brooklyn shaking her head about that one. And now all of a sudden, he is just this regular top 10, top fiver in the truck series. He's on the precipice of getting a victory for his team. So I would not be in the slightest bit surprised to see Taylor Gray get the victory on Friday night. As far as Saturday's Xfinity Series race is concerned, I kind of hinted towards it during my who I'm well during topic four about the Xfinity race at Martinsville. I'm going to go with Chandler Smith mostly because he's a guy with momentum, and honestly, I know he hasn't won yet in on an intermediate racetrack, but let's not forget how good he was at Las Vegas. He just hasn't quite closed it out at Las Vegas and Texas. While they're not quite the same, it's the same. It's a same track type as an intermediate racetrack. So I think honestly, I'll go with him, with Parker Kligerman kind of sneaking in second place because he nearly won last year's Xfinity race in that wild restart. And when I caught him on pit road that afternoon, he was not fighting Sage Karam. He was just like, man, we were so close. I could smell victory lane. I thought I had it. I'm so mad at myself. And I was just like, man, he's hyped up on that Spike Light coolers. I'm just kidding, PK. But he did a great job in that race. Now, for Sunday's race, I have to go with William Byron because next to Kyle Larson, before Larson got wrecked on that restart, which I can still see, unfortunately, right in front of me from last fall's race, William Byron was pretty good too. And I think it could have been a case where he and the five were going to be fighting for the victory because of all those crazy late race restarts and the wrecks and the mayhem that happened. William certainly kept himself in position and he got around Bubba Wallace like nothing. This is my race to win. I'm going to get that historical victory for Hendrick Motorsports. He did. And I don't see anything changing on that. Although your pick, Brooklyn, Kyle Larson has something to say about that because he is a past Texas race winner. And honestly, if it wasn't for what happened on that restart with 19 to go, I'm not blaming Bubba Wallace. I'm just saying common denominator. If that didn't happen, we were probably going to be talking about a five-car victory in September. So I think Larson's going to, that's a probably good pick that he may make up for it in April, which that would have been cool if he had won that weekend because I interviewed him that week and would have been a full circle moment. But it wasn't to be. We got William Byron, and I interviewed him for this show on Saturday, and he won the race. So just saying, if the 24 wants another victory, he could fill in the blanks on that one. But those are some great race picks that we both made, and we're going to keep track of this. Starting this week, Brooklyn and I are going to keep tabs on how we're doing our points, our race picks with points, and I have a feeling Brooklyn's going to beat me on this. But what do you think? Are you team Brooklyn? Are you team Rob? Let us know in the comments on socials by hitting us up at the podium finish. We want to get your votes on that. And I'll put a poll to when you see this, listen to this podcast, when it drops later this week or on Thursday, Nathan. And we'll see what happens. I'm curious to see who prevails when we get to Phoenix in terms of who got their best race picks. And we're going to consider all the series we pick. So it's not just if Brooklyn beats me in Cup, I could have beaten her in Trucks and Xfinity. So we'll find out. I'm going to keep tabs on it and we'll find out how we do as the year goes on. With that, folks, we're heading down to the home stretch of our show. Let's get to the hot seat with William Byron. Welcome back to another edition of In the Hot Seat here on the Podium Finish. I'm Rob Tiongson, and on this edition, this is literally live from the racetrack. Well, remotely. William's at the racetrack. I'm not. As in William Byron, of course, driver of the number 24 Exalta Ruby Red Chevrolet Camaro ZL1. What did I say, Ruby Red? I'm going to let William explain what that is in a second because it's a very special weekend for Hendrick Motorsports. So before we get going here, how are you doing, William? I know you haven't hit the track, so this is kind of a fresh one for us.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to get out there today.
I'm looking forward to it, too. And I see you also have the Ruby Red hat, so I know it's a big weekend for Mr. H and the entire company. But just tell us a little bit about this. What makes this weekend so special for your team?
Yeah, it's the 40th anniversary for Hendrick Motorsports when they started here in Martinsville and won their first race here in Martinsville. So it's a big deal. Big weekend for all of us and a lot of employees and family and friends coming out to watch.
It's going to be a really fun weekend as well, because I understand a lot of Hendrick iconic drivers and crew members are going to be there. So it's almost like a family reunion, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many people back at the shop that all this goes into. So it's going to be a big weekend, a lot of pressure for us to perform. So hopefully we go out there and have a great car and can compete for the win, because this would be a huge win.
Absolutely. I get the feeling this is kind of like a Daytona 500 type atmosphere for you guys, but if any team and any driver can do it, I know you and Rudy are more than capable of getting the job done. And let's actually talk about your year to start with, because obviously in my background behind me, that's your most recent victory at COTA, which was a masterclass drive, by the way, that you did it here in Austin. And I'm just kind of curious, William, what's been working for you and what are some things that you and Rudy are like, all right, we've got to work on this just a teeny bit.
I mean, I think just trying to work on consistency. I feel like at times for us when we're really fast, we're not as consistent. At other times when we're not as fast, we're consistent. So just trying to be fast and consistent, that's the big thing. But I feel like we've had a good start to the year. Daytona 500, that's been the biggest race of the year so far, and we won that. And then COTA was, a big race as well, first road course of the year. So I just feel like we're doing a lot of good things in high pressure situations, which has become a common trend for us as a team. But we just got to keep working on the other weekends that aren't maybe as strong, try to raise those up a little bit.
Certainly. And I know you said last weekend at Richmond, you're like, I don't care what package we have. I'll just race anything we've got. Is that sort of the mentality that you have whenever NASCAR is like, hey, we're gonna do this to make short track racing better, or we're gonna do this to make it a little bit closer at Atlanta or Charlotte? You're just like, you know what? I don't care. If we have to race on three wheels, we'll figure out how to race with three wheels.
For sure. I mean, we just race with what we have and try to do the best job with it. I feel that the short track package to start out this year was an adjustment for us. It was a lot different at Phoenix, and so we just had to adjust our setup and accommodate for that. But I feel like we've started to get back to, last weekend was solid, good speed from everyone at Hendrick Motorsports. So feel like we're back in the realm we need to be. So we just got to keep building.
Absolutely. And I know that that's always encouraging when you guys get off to a strong start, which is a trademark with Hendrick, is consistency throughout the year, no matter if it's here in April or October or November when things get down to crunch time. And the thing about you, when you talked about Daytona, when I looked up statistics for you, you're the sixth different Hendrick driver to win the Great American Race. I'm just kind of curious what the significance was for you to be that sixth different driver to win it and also to do it in the 40th anniversary season.
It was really special. I mean, that race is such a big event in itself and really kind of gets the season kicked off. And I've never had great results in that race. We've always struggled to finish. So just getting to the finish was a goal this year. And then being in contention to win was obviously a goal. And I feel like we accomplished all of that. We were up front throughout the week. We had a good duel. We were contending. And then in the 500, we made all the right decisions there at the end and was able to come out on top. So it was pretty special.
And to do it in the backup car, which I don't think a lot of people understand how significant that was. I mean, you didn't have the greatest starting position, but yet you're like, you know what? I don't care. This is as good as my primary car.
For sure. I mean, I've grown pretty accustomed to having backup cars at super speedways, so it's not mentally messing me up anymore. I've just gotten used to doing that, but it's good, when you can have a backup car that's as prepared and as good as that one was. We had some growing pains in practice to work through, but we had a great prepared car when we got out there on Monday.
And it's just neat to see the 24 car get another Great American Race victory because, you know, it came at the 25th anniversary of Jeff Gordon's 1999 Daytona 500 victory, which he was still regaling about when I talked to him a few weeks ago. And, you know, when you think about the fact that throughout your career, you've kind of been a wunderkind type of driver, at least in my eye, in a good way. And then to have this pressure to be the driver of the 24 car, how have you coped with the pressures of not only being the latest driver to drive this iconic ride, but also to be with probably the best team in all of NASCAR.
I really think it just comes down to confidence and having the confidence to make good decisions, say the right things to your team to improve. It's a never-ending process to get better and improve each week. And I feel like as the years have gone on, I've gotten more accustomed and more used to that role and just trying to be a good leader and trying to lead by example. So I feel that, the race team that I have around me is I'm surrounded by great people and we all do our part.
It shows every weekend, like the preparation, the dedication to get things done. Even if the finish may not be the best, you guys are always committed to giving it your all. And it's such an evident trait since you and Rudy have been together these last couple of years. And it's great dynamic to watch you guys work together to problem solve and get these victories when you guys are in contention to win races. And another thing about you, William, is that you're one of the faces of the Sim to Reality racing movement. Now, a lot of folks I talk to who've come up the racing ladder, who went in iRacing, often say, you know, if it wasn't for William Byron, I wouldn't be here. You know, when you hear people like Parker Retzlaff, you hear Roger Carruth, their path to be in NASCAR, and knowing that you're the guy kind of started things up. You know, you're a young driver, but doesn't that kind of humble you to know you kind of made a revolutionary path versus the traditional path to racing?
It's cool. I think that it's grown a lot in the last few years. I feel like iRacing has just continued to evolve and get better. And with that has come more guys coming from that atmosphere and that environment and learn how to race in real cars. So I just feel like there's sky's the limit for iRacing. They have a lot of great people working over there that are perfecting the tire model and everything. And kind of curious to, you know, I haven't been on there in a few weeks, but I'm curious if I get back on there, what the progress is, because it always seems like each time I get back on there, the progress that they make is pretty amazing. So just major props to them and the investment they put in the sport.
Certainly. And I know they have like a wet weather package or some kind of rain thing that they've added on with their latest build. And obviously for fans who may not be able to do iRacing, next year they have NASCAR 25 for the video game console. So I'm kind of curious if you've ever done video game console experiences with NASCAR.
I have, just way back when I started in the sport and just getting interested in it through that. So for sure, I would play NASCAR 2008 with my buddies and kind of all the way before that, like 2004 and 5. So it's a fun game.
Now, do you often play as Jimmy Johnson? Because I know he was one of your favorites growing up.
I would. It depends, you know, what was going on. But yeah, I would typically play as him.
Fair enough. I was going to say next year when the NASCAR 25 game comes out, I know we can't answer the question yet. I was going to ask, are you going to play as yourself in that game?
I don't know. I need to figure that out.
Fair enough. We can table that for when that game comes out late next year for sure. Now, I know a lot of fans have been watching NASCAR a lot this year, and I would attribute some of that to the Netflix documentary that was released earlier this year, NASCAR Full Speed. And we got to see a little bit of what you do. And one of the things that really caught my attention was just how committed you are to being physically fit in the gym. And it showed last year at Martinsville. I mean, you had probably the most hardest fought 12th place finish with how spent you were. But I mean, how much dividends did working out play off for you? And also, what do you think of how having this exposure is for NASCAR with NASCAR's Netflix docuseries?
Yeah, I think it's been great. I think that the Netflix show has really shown a light into different drivers and how they prepare and what their personal life is like. So I think it's been really good for the sport and the growth of it. And I feel like me personally, I'm just always trying to find ways to improve. I feel like my time in the first couple months of the year has been devoted to some different ways to prepare. And I feel like each year just try to evolve that into what I think is best. So feel like I'm doing a good job this year of being prepared and feeling fresh and ready when I get to the track.
It's showing really well. And I think that's what's attributing to some of your success in recent times. Side note, you're the reason why I've been working out to lose a lot of weight. So I love watching what you do. Cause I'm like, if you can do it, so can I at my age.
Awesome.
So yeah, man, I appreciate what you're doing for sure. Couple more questions before I wrap things up here, and just kind of a lighthearted question, kind of along the same lines of my last one. But aside from racing things that you want to accomplish in life, what is a competitive athletic event that you would like to challenge yourself into doing, whether it's a 10K or a marathon?
I'm a pretty avid swimmer, so I would say doing something related to swimming and just trying to be a better swimmer. That would be my goal. So I think whatever event that would be cool.
I like that. Maybe you'll give me the next Michael Phelps in your after NASCAR career, or maybe not. We'll see. My last question for you, and this is kind of my little theme question, like a Jeff Gluck type of question. But if you were stuck in a deserted island for the rest of your life, and you had to choose three different songs that can get you by the times, what songs would they be?
Ooh, that's tough. I wouldn't say songs, but I would say artists. Morgan Wallen, John Mayer, and Jimmy Buffett. Those come to my mind as they kind of put my mind at ease.
If I say good tropical mindset for sure, those kind of songs. Hey, listen, William, I really appreciate you joining me for this hot seat interview. And did you want to say anything to your racing fans out there before you head out on the track?
Yeah, just thanks for all the support from all the fans. We're looking forward to a great weekend here in Martinsville, and hopefully can give them a show and give them something to cheer for.
Certainly. I'm sure you will for this weekend and the rest of the year. But let's catch up real soon, hopefully in person at the track. But best of luck to you, my friend. I appreciate always doing these interviews with you.
Thank you, man. You have a good one.
And that was William Byron on the hot seat segment with us. And my thanks, of course, goes to William for taking the time of his busy Saturday, literally before he got into his 24 car at Martinsville Speedway. And of course, my thanks goes to Ashley Ennis as well for making that interview possible. She's always great to work with. I've been working with her and William, really, I think since the 2019 season. So time is flying by when you're having fun or you're just have good rapport with people. And I have that with Ashley and William. So thank you both for making this interview happen. I know we had our schedules on the flux, if you will, but that's how we know how it goes in the industry. So really thankful to always do these stories and interviews on our show. Now it's time for closing thoughts. And yes, on Wednesday night, this is literally live. So as you know, Brooklyn and I were setting up shop for the show, I was looking at my timeline and lo and behold, I'm surprised to see this news that Caitlin Clark's number has been retired from the University of Iowa, which that's pretty quick to say the least to have your jersey
already
retired.
Yeah, oh. That's really fast.
I mean, huh. I get her legacy and contribution to the sport of women's basketball in the college side, but wow, that says a lot about what she's done for her school and in the sport. So I know it doesn't really take the sting away from Sunday's loss, but that's awesome. So no one's ever going to wear that number again when they go play for Iowa, which I expect them to be a good school next year just because they may be losing their seniors. I'm sure they've already recruited some new talents to new young blood, if as Nathan would say, to carry the legacy for Coach Bluder in that program that Caitlin and Kate Martin and Gabby Marshall, Hannah Stolke, I can name all Sydney Falter. Yeah, I know their names, just like Brooklyn knows the names of our women's soccer team. And we often talk about that too when we're not talking about racing. So, wow, that's pretty cool. I was about to say before we ended the show, like, it's amazing to see women's sports getting all the attention it's getting just because I feel like it's been a long time coming. And we should really celebrate this because in my perspective as a man, I want it to just be normalized to the point that we're not desensitized, but we actually treat women in the same regard as we do with men's professional sports. Now, I know there's a lot of barriers to break down. The beauty of motorsports is that the car does not give a care, but the gender. All it cares about is, can you wrestle that machine? It doesn't care about gender, social class, or anything. But with other sports, there's a lot of things that needs to change. But when we have athletes like Caitlin or Alex Morgan, or even Alyssa Nahar, the goaltender for, the USWNT, she is phenomenal. I want to see women prospering, succeeding. Let's make it so that young boys and young men out there can look up to women too and not just be pigeonholed to just idolize men or male athletes or male celebrities. It's okay to be looking up to women as well. You should. It's okay. And hopefully in NASCAR, we have women drivers making their way to the series because that's the one thing I feel like if we could have our own Caitlin Clark, I mean, I think Kyle Larson is from a talent side. He is. I'm saying if we had like a female type of driver who has that, like that, how can I say this? This mystique, this aura and the talents. People are going to be watching our sports so closely. We'll have our own little mania going on, which would be really fascinating. And I have a coworker from my day job whose daughter plays for a college up in the Northeast, and she's gotten the chance to meet Caitlin. She said, what you see on TV or in the press or, you know, her social medias, she's exactly like that in person. She's a class act. She's so great in person. So no, this was not the Caitlin Clark is appreciated by Rob Tionson segment, although that is the case. And yes, I am gushing, but it's an admiration as well, because I think she does so many great things. And on my nephew's birthday of all days, next Monday, we'll get to finally see her get officially drafted by the Indiana Fever and the WNBA. So I'm going to be so busy this summer covering races and then watching the WNBA and then watching how the soccer team does too. So
yes.
I love it because we're combining my love of racing with women's sports. That's my
thought. Yes, I'm so glad you brought up women's sports. I'm still so happy about the, for anybody who watched the She Believes Cup last night for the U.S. women. And I just want to give, you've already mentioned her name, but I just want, and for anybody who doesn't follow soccer, I'm sorry, and this is kind of random if you don't know the soccer world, but if you don't know the soccer world, you should at least know the U.S. women, because they are a force. A huge shout out to Alyssa Nair. She's been a beast since they got back from the World Cup. The World Cup obviously didn't end how they wanted to, but she has just turned that around 180 degrees, and she is unstoppable right now. And so that's been really fun to watch. I am also excited to watch Texas and see how that plays out, even though, as I said, I have a love-hate relationship with it. It is. Texas is a fun track. I think there are pros and cons of every track, right? There are pros and cons of road courses and short tracks and intermediates. You just have to find the joy in every track.
That's exactly what I've been telling people from the very beginning, since 1997. Actually, that's what I said at 11 years old. There's a beauty to every track. Okay, so people, get off Texas Motor Speedway's back. You can criticize them about maybe the facilities and all of that, but when it comes to the actual on-track action, this is a unique intermediate. And if this track, if this goes away like what happened to Kentucky, I'll be upset, okay?
Absolutely. I forgot to mention that. I'm also formally starting my Free Kentucky movement after this.
We absolutely, there's going to be hashtags. We're going to put TikToks, memes. Oh man, we absolutely have to do something about this. Free Kentucky. And I'm going to say love Texas. I don't know.
We need to be partners in this. I feel like we have close aligned goals.
We do. And if we can get some spokespeople to back us up, then that we're just going to be social media sensations, to say the least. So just saying, you know, Alyssa Nahar, you want to support our movement, go ahead and hit us up on our socials.
We're big fans. Also, we could use your followers.
Yes. Yeah. Your power means so much to us. Just saying. Same thing with you, Caitlin. Go to a NASCAR race for Pete's sakes, because you're going to be playing in Indianapolis. So you're going to probably hear about motorsports all the time. So come on, support our movement. Support the racing movement. That's what I say. Well, with that, I think this is a good time to go put a bow on our show. So for Brooklyn Jackson and William Byron, I'm Rob Tiongson saying thanks so much for joining us for episode 112 of TPF Live, the world's fastest hour of racing talk. For all of our previous 111 episodes, catch those on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Next week will be episode 113, which will be the post-Texas pre-Talladega edition. Ooh, could be pretty fun. But until next time, as I always like to say, let's go get that checkered flag. And until next time, so long, everyone.